Chapter 4, Transferring Power and Credibility. All credibility, all good conscience, all evidence of truth come only from the senses. Friedrich Nietzsche. The company you keep and the people who endorse you have a powerful effect on your ability to persuade. When someone like Donald Trump recommends a banker or a developer, that person is rarely questioned or challenged because of the implied or outright endorsement from Trump himself. You're also judged by the company you keep. People will make assumptions about you based on your friends and associates, which can be very powerful, or devastating, depending on the group of friends and associations. For example, you may be more inclined to do business with someone who is a member of the Better Business Bureau or the Chamber of Commerce simply because of what those organizations stand for, particularly if you don't have experience in the category of business from which you're going to purchase a product or service. Being able to have a strong lineup of people who will willingly endorse you or belonging to the right groups or associations is something everyone who persuades must conscientiously set out to develop. Take a look around you right now. It has been said that your net worth is determined by looking at the average net worth of your closest friends. In the same respect, your persuasive net worth can be determined by the people you choose to associate with. If you hope to excel as a persuader, you should be actively involved with the most persuasive people and associations that you can that are closely related to those you hope to persuade. However, being a part of a group or having influential friends is not enough by itself. You must actively cultivate their endorsement, whether it is direct or implied. Transfer of power and credibility. Transfers of power happen every day in dozens of situations. You recommend your barber to your neighbor and he starts doing business with that barber. You want to get into the best doctor in town, so you have your friend drop a good word for you. You want a good job, so you give your very best reference. In each of these examples, there was an active transfer of power, some more overt than others. But in each, one person went to bat for the other, actively saying, "You can trust this person because I say so and you trust me." When my wife was pregnant, we wanted the best OBGYN in town, and he was not taking any new clients, period. He was treating a very good friend's wife who had just had a baby, and who was also the campaign manager for one of our senators. When she mentioned that we'd really like to get in, he immediately made room on his calendar for us. Why? Because it wasn't that he didn't have room for more patients, it was that he only had room for more of the kinds of patients he was looking for. Because he knew my friend's wife, he was more than happy to fit us in. We went through nearly the same process with our pediatrician. Active power and credibility transfer. Active transfers of power typically happen when one person asks another to endorse her or to vouch for her in some way. Active transfers of power can also happen when someone you've just met introduces you to peers or colleagues. The individual is putting his relationship and credibility on the line for the person he is introducing or endorsing. All too often, we miss the opportunity to get active transfers of power because we're afraid to ask. Yet that simple transfer of power and credibility from me to you makes persuasion much easier and much more effective. A more applicable example in business would be asking for referrals and having the person whom you want to refer you actually introduce you in person or by phone and give his endorsement of you at the time. The likelihood is much higher that the person to whom you've just been introduced will buy from you because of the relationship she has with her friend, the endorser. One of the nonprofit groups I've worked with in the past solicits donations door to door. I had them make one simple change to their process. Rather than just asking which of their neighbors might be interested in helping, I asked them, when we walked to that neighbor's, if they would simply wave to the neighbor when they came to the door. That simple act of waving increased donations by over 15%. The endorsement was overt, but not one word was exchanged, and the person who was asking for the donation simply said to the neighbor, "I just came from your neighbor's house, and they said you're a great person to talk to." Take the time right now to make a list of all the people you know who could help you in some situation where you're required to persuade on a regular basis, and ask them if they'll introduce you to at least one person you would like to persuade. If they will give you an outright endorsement, that's even better. But if they won't, or if they're not currently a client of yours, simply have them make the introduction. Once the introduction is made, persuasion becomes significantly easier. The people you hope to persuade will make assumptions about you and your worthiness to do business with them based simply on an introduction. But beware. They may go back to the person who introduced you and confirm the information. Be sure that what you say about the relationship you have with the person is accurate. Another often overlooked transfer of power is testimonials. When one CEO tells another CEO of a similar company that one supplier is better than another, that supplier's chance of winning business improves. The same is true when you have written testimonials or if you are putting them on your website, audio, or video promotions. Those transfers of power cut right to the heart of my concern. The reason I'm concerned about what you're telling me may be because I don't know you or I have no experience with you. But when someone else steps up metaphorically and says he trusts you, I begin to get more comfortable. And with each additional testimonial, I get more comfortable. Finally, anytime you can get someone who is actively transferring power and credibility to actually demonstrate how something works or shares her results with your product or service, you increase the transfer. She is in effect not just giving you her power and credibility, but she is in fact persuading for you, which is the ultimate transfer of power and credibility. Implied transfer of power and credibility. Implied transfers of power happen when people listen to what you say based on what they believe about people, places, events, organizations, or shared experiences. The organizations you belong to have a lot of power, prestige, and trust associated with them as well. Organizations that can be particularly powerful are fraternities, fraternal organizations, for example, Masons, Elks, Shriners, business associations, for example, Chamber of Commerce, Better Business Bureau, JC's, Rotary, Young President's Organization, non-secular organizations, churches, synagogues, Christian Businessmen's Associations, and charities, American Red Cross, Make-A-Wish Foundation. Even informal organizations like Neighborhood Watch give you an opportunity to associate with people who will be more willing to listen to what you say and trust you based on your shared experiences or shared commitment to a set of ideas or principles. When you talk to other people inside the organization, there is trust because you are alike. When you talk to those outside the organization, there is a degree of trust based on their experience and belief about the organization. Other implied transfers of power and credibility happen when you're the subject of media coverage. This is why, as a persuader, you must have a personal public relations plan. With some notable exceptions, people believe more of what they see, read, or hear because there is an assumption that if it is in print or on the news, then it must be true. We can all point to the many times when the news was wrong, yet we continue to watch and believe. We pay more attention to the cars that we see featured in newscasts and we trust the products that have been covered. We also trust and listen to those people who end up on the news because they wouldn't be there if they were not experts on their subject. There is room for everyone in the news. As of this writing, more than 50% of what you see in the news is not hard news but placed or developed by publicists working to effectively position products and people. Always remember to try and get the person who is interviewing you or writing about you active in giving his endorsement or testimonial. Even if he hasn't tried your product or service, use powerful questions to move him to acknowledge that he intends to try it, and the transfer of power and credibility is made. You can make your own news. We'll talk more about this later on. There are many times when transfers of credibility can be important. For example, in negotiations, simply having someone who is neutral or who is respected transfer her credibility to your argument can make your position more acceptable or make you appear more reasonable. When you are writing emails or sending letters, you can transfer credibility by copying the person whose authority or credibility you want on the email or on the correspondence. Power and credibility transfers are reciprocal. If you want people to endorse you, then be the first to endorse. Be known for your willingness to help people make the connections they need so they're indebted to you and they'll help you make the connections that are important to you. Also, be very careful how you use the credibility that has been transferred to you. You alienate two people the moment you mistreat a person whose trust has been given to you, the mistreated person and the person who endorsed you. Chapter Review. Transfers of power and credibility from a respected or trusted person to you enhance your ability to persuade. Transfers of power and credibility can be active or implied. Active transfers of power and credibility can happen in person or through testimonials. Implied transfers of power occur when people make decisions about you based on the company you keep and the organizations you belong to. Give to receive. Be known for the company you keep and your willingness, when appropriate, to transfer your own power and credibility in order to get the transfer when you need it. Success questions. Whom do I know today who can transfer power or credibility to me in a situation I am currently trying to influence? Whom do I know who needs my power or influence? What organizations could I or should I belong to that will enhance my ability to persuade by giving me implied power and/or credibility? How can I use testimonials or other endorsements to help me persuade more effectively? Chapter 5. Storytelling. I keep 6 honest serving men. They taught me all I knew. Their names are what and why, and when and how and where and who. Rudyard Kipling, The Elephant's Child, Just So Stories. There is nothing quite as compelling or fascinating as a story well told. You must listen. You're drawn in and completely engaged. When I was a young boy, I had only a couple of places to go for refuge. The Carnegie Public Library in Caldwell, Idaho was my favorite. The Carnegie was one of the last of its kind in my part of Idaho. It was a big stone building that sat on a stately lawn shaded by large trees and was covered randomly in ivy. It was somehow imposing and inviting at the same time. Something odd happened to me each time I walked by the library. It opened its arms and beckoned me in with irresistible force, wrapping me in its bookish embrace the moment the heavy door swung closed. Once I got inside, I entered a whole new world, a world inhabited by Ernest Hemingway, Jack Kerouac, Zane Grey, Peter Hathaway Capstick, Jack London, Robert Rourke, Louis L'Amour, and Mark Twain. Each one of these men was a willing participant in my protection and education. They gleefully took me to faraway lands where I met interesting people and had unbelievable adventures with them. Each of them taught me how to tell a story in a new and unique way, and each of them introduced me to someone else desirous of expanding my mind and my experience. They taught me how to see a story everywhere, and they showed me how to share it with you. As I write this, I'm sitting in Minneapolis, Minnesota. It's 25 degrees below zero outside, and as I watch the people rushing below my hotel window, I see their faces buried deep in their coats and scarves. All but one peculiar man, that is. His exposed skin is blast furnace red, his hair is freezer burned, and his painful breath is exhaled in cartoon balloons that break off and crash, shattering into the street. As I watch him, I realize that he's in trouble. I can tell without hearing a word he's cursing and his fists flail frantically. Little does he know that his predicament is about to get worse. He can't see it coming, but I can. See how difficult it is to stop listening to this story? Right now you're left wondering what happens next. You want to know. You have to know. With a few simple sentences, I broke through your reverie and caused you to have an experience. You know what 25 degrees below feels like, or you have a very good idea. I bet, even as you listen to this, you can imagine the chill going down your spine and breathing in air so cold it freezes your nose and burns your lungs. And I'm sure you can imagine this poor man and wonder what is about to happen to him. So before I teach you anything else, let me tell you what unfolded in front of my eyes. The man pounds the glass in front of him, hoping to get someone's attention. He begins to get very cold. He fumbles with his key and tries in vain to get the door open while the man inside, warm in his wool overcoat and fur cap, gestures and yells at the glass. The man who is freezing yells back. I strain to hear what's being said, but to no avail. I'm in a hotel room across the street. The warm man inside abruptly turns his back and walks out of my view, causing another round of animated shouting and banging from the outside. I grab my camera and focus in on the scene, sensing something bad is about to happen. I can feel it. I can see small droplets of water freezing to the face of the man outside the glass door. I wonder why none of the people walking by will stop and help, and just at that moment, it happens. The man inside puts a piece of paper to the glass. I focus in my 300mm lens and read, "I'm sorry, sir, the locks are frozen and we can't get them open. Look up, your wife is dropping your heavy coat out the window." And with that, everything changed. A terrible situation turned good. Salvation fell from the hands of a woman 5 stories above. As the woman slammed the window, he caught the coat and greedily put it over his jogging attire, and then began a molasses slow trot to the coffee house a block down the street. Notice how fulfilling the completion of the story was, how you had to keep listening to know what happened, and how good it felt to reach the conclusion. You already drew some conclusions about how it would end, and I gave you just enough information to fill in the blanks at the right time so you could draw the correct conclusions. That's exactly what happens when you tell a story to a prospect or to anyone you want to deeply persuade. Stories have inherent power. We have learned from stories our whole lives. We've learned to listen to stories and look for the moral or the meaning in the story. We've also learned that stories are engaging. We have a different way of listening to a story than we do to facts and figures. In fact, you can feel the difference in your body and see it in your posture. If someone tells us a story, we're drawn in and we listen to it. We find ourselves drawn deeply if they're a good storyteller. If you're a poor storyteller, we'll excuse that in many cases and try to make the story work for us. Stories become very powerful when you're persuading people. The challenge that many people have when they're persuading is that they do not take the time to think about what their story is. They throw out a number of facts or they throw out a number of ideas. They just do it in a kind of litany or in a bullet-pointed way, and that really is not a story. It's more like a story problem that we have to solve. I don't know if you're like me, but I love stories and hate story problems. When you just give facts and figures, it forces people to go into a linear logical kind of evaluation process. Does 1 plus 1 equal 2? If the answer is no, then this is not relevant or valid or even credible to me. The result is that they begin to become skeptical and start trying to find reasons you're wrong instead of going deeper with you. If you want to fly under your customer's radar, or that of the people you're trying to persuade, then it's important that you tell a well-crafted story. Your story should be full of imagery and use powerful verbs to move the reader or listener. There's a big difference between a green sofa and an overstuffed chair with arms that come up to your ears when you sink into it with a child on your lap. There's an even bigger difference between an internet service provider and the one place on the internet where you can learn and connect and become. It is your old-fashioned library meets the movie The Matrix. Your stories need to create connections between what the person is thinking and what he already believes, and what you want him to believe and do. Stories are very persuasive for many reasons and on many levels. We're used to listening to stories. It's how we are taught from the very earliest age. Oral traditions were passed on by word of mouth before print or electronic communications were readily accessible, and for many, continue today in the form of family biographies. We've also learned that when someone tells a story, we should listen no matter how badly told the story is. At a very young age, you discovered that stories carry messages, and you learned how to decipher them, but that deciphering required your attention. As persuaders, we want our listeners' attention. Stories are also persuasive because they put the listener into the action. Whether written, oral, or delivered electronically, good stories put us in a kind of trance. We see ourselves as part of the action, and you can take no action external to your body until you've first taken it in your mind. You must imagine it first to make it happen. Stories engage both hemispheres of the brain. They encourage you to remember and to feel. Stories engage the emotions. Whenever you set out to persuade, you must think about what you want to say, the message you want to get across, and what it is that you want the person to do. Then you begin to craft your story. Persuasive stories are different from regular stories fundamentally because they're designed to get your attention, develop a high level of interest, create desire, and allow you to draw the conclusions necessary to take the action I want you to take. One of the not-so-obvious powers of a well-told persuasive story is that no one else can tell the story the way you do, especially your competition. It's not surprising that the description I just gave you sounds a lot like the AIDA, Attention, Interest, Desire, Action formula that has been the staple of advertising for the better part of a century. The reason is simple. The best advertising people are phenomenal storytellers. They just broke storytelling down to its simplest and purest form as it related to advertising. There's an important distinction to make between persuasive stories and storybook stories. While storybook stories share many of the same structure and delivery elements as persuasive stories, they vary in their intent and purpose. Storybook stories have the intent and purpose of entertaining the reader. They're designed to affect you and satisfy your need for a form of escapism. Persuasive stories take advantage of the proven elements of novels and other forms of oral storytelling, but they're designed to create a different outcome. They're designed to get you to come to a predetermined conclusion and take a predetermined course of action designed by the persuader. How to tell a persuasive story. Some people can tell a great story every time, and others simply cannot get it right no matter how hard they try. But storytelling is a skill that we can all perfect and use at will. Here are the steps to tell a persuasive story. Number one, know your story. The reason most of the stories you tell right now are not persuasive is that they have not been well thought out, or the material and experience are not your own. You have pieces that you can bring to mind or specific example, but there is no real flow to the pieces, so it feels more like you're rattling off bullet points or dropping in pieces. Worse, you're told stories by other people that you're supposed to adapt to be your own, and you don't have all of the background information to make the story authentic and complete. The most persuasive stories are those in which you have some firsthand experience. For stories to be well received, you must know what the listener or reader needs to hear in order to have his needs fulfilled. I want you to think of something you sell, or something you must persuade someone of regularly. In order for a story to be persuasive, you must begin by outlining what you have. What are the points that must be made every time you talk to someone in order for him to be persuaded? What are the things that your audience must know or will have questions about that you must answer for them to be fulfilled? What will they get out of your suggested solution? List all of those elements on a piece of paper. Next, layer on your proof. What testimonials and proof do you have that will convince me that what you're saying is true? Who else is doing what you're asking me to do? List your elements of proof on your paper now. Now make me emotional. What is the pain I will feel or other people may have felt from not buying what you're selling? Did they lose money or respect? Did they suffer a loss of some kind? Are they setting themselves up for some kind of failure? What is it that will happen or might happen if they don't take action? List that now. Set me up for the questions I should ask or will most certainly ask. Identify those questions and their answers and write them down on your list as well. Finally, what do you want me to do? Write this down very specifically as well as the steps I'll need to take in order to do it. Also, write down what my objections will be. If I need to get financing, put that down. Or if I must get approval from the board, write that down. Get all the objections out of the way. Number two, lay out your story. A persuasive story answers the questions of who, what, when, where, why, and how in the following format. A. Grab me by the ears. In a moment, I'll show you how to develop a grab me by the ears statement. But for now, know that you must command attention. You want a statement so powerful that people 15 feet away will stop what they are doing to come and listen, or they'll strain their ears in good manners to eavesdrop. B. Lay the foundation. In this section of your story, you lay the groundwork. You include any information I must know to understand the story, fill in the holes in my knowledge, and give me enough background that I can understand what you are saying. In this section, you insert the things that the person must know that you identified on the paper earlier. C. Engage my emotions. Get me excited or move me into a place where I'm experiencing pain, lust, desire, or loss. Grab at least 3 points from the list you created that are emotional and put those in this section of your story. Be sure you use points that I'm going to have a hard time disagreeing with or that I know immediately will happen to me or have happened to someone I know. If I cannot relate here, then it is time to lay in a story about someone like me, describing what happened to them. D. Layer on the proof. Give me an example featuring someone I know, preferably, or again, someone just like me. Tell me his story, letting me know that this is a real person. If you have no other reference, tell a story about yourself that adds credibility and proof at this point. E. Answer my questions. Lay out at least 3 to 5 of the questions I will most likely have and answer them preemptively. Let me know that you're an expert because you know exactly what it is I have questions about. Layer on more proof here, showing how someone else had that exact question answered and what the outcome was. F. Give me enough information that I can draw your conclusion. Give me only enough detail so that I have a few small questions left that require an interaction. Tell me what I have to do, by when, and why I should. In psychological terms, this causes us to do a transderivational search to try and find answers and meaning. G. Get my feedback. I want to know that I got the point. I don't want to have to guess, so ask. Allow me to give you more information now that I've heard your story. Let me demonstrate how what you've just said applies to me. That is how a persuasive story is laid out. Once you've laid out the story in this format, you can begin adding in the part that makes the story interesting. You must lay out every story you intend to use to persuade in just this format to ensure your success. Whether you're telling the story one-on-one or one-to-many, or telling the story in writing, in an ad, or on the internet, the format remains the same because ultimately, the best stories are told to one person at a time, no matter how many people are in the audience or how they receive your message. Persuasive stories engage you individually and they bring you along through the process because they're laid out in a way that pulls you in and hooks you and everyone else who is reading or listening. 3. Tell your story. Telling your story is the fun part and the part where most people fail. Think back to when you were a child and someone read to you. If you can't remember, go to a library or a bookstore where they read to children and watch. It was completely enthralling when someone read a story to you, but there was always one person who you really wanted to read the story. That person was the one who made the story come to life. Dragons roared through the reader, causing you to squeal in terror. Maidens talked in high, squeaky voices that tickled the insides of your ears. Woodcutters' deep voices could rattle your bones. You were spellbound, and you couldn't wait for the very next word. When your favorite reader was reading, you couldn't hear enough stories. Persuasive storytellers engage your senses with their body language, with their tone, with their eye contact, and with their emotions. They transfix you with emotion, tickle you with humor, and lead you to the only logical conclusion anyone could make. And oh, what a feeling it is. When you first begin telling your story, you must grab your listeners or readers by the ears. The best way to grab them by the ears is to have an interesting hook. Sometimes it can be as simple as saying, "Let me tell you a story." Or you can start out with, "You know, I just thought of," or with a question, "Has this ever happened to you?" Any question will lead people easily into a state where they will listen to your story. If you ask a question, most people feel compelled to answer. That gives you permission to begin the story. A great way to deliver a question is to ask, "Have you ever experienced?" So if I ask you this question, "Have you ever experienced a time where money was so tight that you couldn't imagine spending a dime, and yet you knew positively that the best thing you could do for your future was to invest every dime you had?" You're forced to go inside yourself and try and find a matching experience. Go ahead and do it now, noticing how hard you're willing to search for a matching answer. People will always find an experience like that in their lives, even if they did not take the action they felt they should have taken. They have the actual experience and the emotional experience to connect with the story, and they will find them. Once you've acknowledged that they have or have not had the experience, it gives you a chance to move right into the story. You need only alter your story slightly to engage people who have not had the experience by telling them the story of your own experience. Allow me to demonstrate a few additional secrets of storytelling as I tell you the following story. The best way to tell stories is to tell them in chunks, so you start out with your question or whatever's going to hook your audience. Then, you think about the different kinds of people you'll be talking to on a regular basis. Most of us talk to only 4 or 5 kinds of people throughout a typical engagement in our business. There are buyers. There are people who are skeptical. There are people who have questions. You're going to have a different piece or slightly different story to tell each of those people. Those links are the pieces of your story that link it to any buyer or person you need to persuade. We want to start the story, hook him in, and then we want to link it to something that's important and powerful to him. Here is an example of how I would do that if I were selling cars. You're here for the red car, right? I might simply ask, or what's important in a car to you? Or what's important about a car for you? Here's another good question. What's important about this car to you? I would get the person to give me additional information, then beginning with the answer, here's how the conversation would go. Well, I'm really looking for a red car because I'd like a sports car, but I want it to be a convertible, and I want it to be fast, and I like those new low-profile tires. You know, I just remembered this. There's a guy who came in here a couple of days ago who does parking lot races. You know those races where they have cones in the parking lot and you get to race through them? He really liked red cars too. But you know what he told me? He said that when he was racing, that a dark car actually served him better because people could spot it on the track easier in the midst of all the red cars, and he wanted all eyes on him. Everybody who has a sports car seems to want a red or bright blue or something like that. So instead, he chose a black car because it stood out, and for him, that really worked. Now, I'm not saying this is right for you, of course, but if you'd like to be unique and you really like the look of those low-profile tires and speed is important to you, then it's something to consider. Is standing out from the crowd important to you, or do you want a car that matches a lot of the others on the street? Here, you get another piece of information from the buyer, who gives it willingly. He's become a part of your story. No, standing out in the crowd is important to me too. Okay, maybe then we should look at these two cars. If you had a red car, could you have sold it to him? Sure. But what if you really wanted to serve the guy better? Maybe a black car would help him be more unique in his look, or maybe you didn't have a red car with all the options he wanted. Maybe the black car had more margin for you. You shifted his wants through telling a simple story about what happened with someone else and linking it together with his criteria. Finally, the end of your story comes, and we try to make these stories very simple. It's simply a close. What is the point of the story? What is the purpose of the story? If you've told the story correctly, the answer is clearly, this is the right choice for me. The result of hearing the purpose of the story should get you to draw a logical conclusion to take action. That's what you're really trying to do. In the case of the car, you're trying to move the prospect from a red car to a black car. So the purpose of the story is saying, listen, if you want to be different, if you want to set yourself apart, then you buy a black car because everyone else is in a sea of red and yours is the only black car. That is the one that gets noticed. It begins to shift his criteria. It begins to move him forward in a way that nothing else could. Writing persuasively means writing down good stories. Telling your story in writing is very similar. If you want to make your sales letters more powerful, write in stories. When you're writing, and this is very important, stories become very powerful in breaking up the copy you're using. If you want to move people to action, you need to have something that keeps rehooking them and getting them to read on and on. Everyone has probably heard the purpose of a headline. The purpose of a headline is to get you to read the first sentence, and the purpose of the first sentence is to get you to read the next, and so on. Stories do that because people begin to look for the next piece of the story, the next part of the puzzle. Some of you outside of the United States may never have heard of Paul Harvey, but Paul Harvey tells stories. All he does is tell stories on the radio, and he's been doing it for decades, and people still tune in with great anticipation, especially since there's a good chance they've already heard the story, but not in the way he tells it. He tells half of the story, he goes to a commercial break, and then he comes back and says, and now, for the rest of the story. People cannot change the station. Unless they were completely uninterested in the story in the first place, people cannot turn the dial during the commercial break because they don't want to miss the rest of the story. Harvey created a cult of listeners with his persuasive stories, told so well that you cannot not stay around and listen. When you write good letters or ads, you simply tell good stories. You can leave the story off anywhere and keep the readers coming back for more, just like Paul Harvey. You can tell three-quarters of the story or half the story. Then you say, you know, I'm going to get to the rest of the story in just a second, but here are a couple things I think are important to note. Then you begin setting your criteria for what it is that you want them to buy by linking the story to what you are selling. Then you'll tell them another piece of the story. You link it together. Finally, at the end, when they have had to read through the whole letter to get to the end of the story, you have now given them all of the information they need to make the only logical conclusion they can, which is to buy from you. As you craft your stories, be sure you're crafting them in pieces that can be linked to each part of your buying process, as well as linked to each kind of person that might be reading your letter, walking in to talk to you, on the phone with you, or listening to you as you were being interviewed in the media.